If we've learned one thing from all the coverage of the tsunami, it's that many survivors are suffering from the lack of clean drinking water. That problem is real, but it's not always related to the disaster. NPR's Richard Harris reports.
Water expert Peter Glick says it's heartening to see the generous public spirit focused on tsunami victims, and it's no surprise to him that supplying clean water is at the top of the list.
I think one of the things the tsunami has shown us is, first of all, how absolutely vital water is to every aspect of human survival, from the prevention of disease to simply providing drinking water so people can live. But it's also shown us that large numbers of people who live in the tsunami-affected areas not only don't have clean drinking water and sanitation now, but they haven't had it for a long time. They've never had it.
Glick heads the Pacific Institute in Oakland. It's an advocacy organization trying to do something about the billion people globally who lack clean water.
Ironically, in the countries hardest hit by the tsunami, there are and have been 200 million people without access to clean drinking water on a day-to-day basis anyway, and 850 million people is the estimate that don't have access to sanitation services, even before the tsunami.
That means that each year, the death toll in this region from the persistent lack of clean water far surpasses the expected death toll from the killer wave. And yet the U.S. government has pledged $350 million to help tsunami victims, while it spends just $40 million a year on water projects in all of Asia and Africa combined.
It's a tiny fraction of what Americans spend on bottled water every year. We spend $10 billion a year on bottled water.
Glick says these deaths are mostly among children who die from diarrheal diseases. They happen one at a time, scattered and unremarked. So Simon Trace, at a London-based charity called WaterAid, says it's hard to create the same sense of urgency about this ongoing tragedy, despite the numbers.
It means roughly a child dying every 15 seconds, or I think if you want to dramatize it, if you think about 20 jumbo jets full of children crashing every day, that would be headline news. That would be a tragedy on a massive scale. But because it's there in the background, happening all the time, unseen, unthought of, it doesn't get the media attention that it deserves, and it doesn't get the support it deserves.
His organization funds water and sanitation projects in the developing world. WaterAid doesn't do emergency response work, so unlike relief agencies, it hasn't seen an increase in donations as a result of the tsunami. Nancy Birdsall, who heads the Center for Global Development in Washington, D.C., is among those trying to figure out how to turn the emergency response into a sustained effort to provide clean water, education, and health care.
Where the U.S. could make a big contribution post-tsunami is thinking not only about the amount of money, but being smart in the way those resources are allocated.
But Birdsall worries that emergency aid will ultimately come out of the overall budget allocated for the developing world.
I think there is a risk because that's what has happened in the last few years. And it's hard to see that that can be avoided without a lot of public attention and scrutiny, given our budget deficit problem in the U.S.
And long-term issues aren't simply a matter of money. Peter Glick says governments in the developing world are also failing to make clean water a priority. And in the region with the tsunami, they now have so many other problems to worry about. Richard Harris, NPR News.